A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And, you know, what I wanted to start off with today was just, you know, telling you guys again, our listeners that have been with us forever know that we repeat ourselves. So this isn't anything new. We read every single email, every single review, every single Facebook post or Instagram. You know, sometimes in our lives we get backed up and it might take us like a week or two or three or something to go back to a post on Facebook or Instagram, but we definitely do. So for our newer listeners, I just thought that we would kind of tell you kind of our stance and how we approach things and how we take feedback. Like I said, we read everything. And when we get an email about, you know, something that someone thought was different about what we're doing, or, hey, it doesn't sound like the same content that you've had, or we even, you know, it could be something that we're just like, you know, we have feedback on this. We will respond and say, thank you, Melissa and I talk about it. How can we change it? How can we make sure that this is always of the same quality that we started off day one shooting for?
Or better.
Or better, yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the hope, that we get better over time. It's really important to us to deliver that to you. With that being said, we have received, you know, a couple of reviews lately that have stated that there was something that someone had feedback on. And we think that's great. We want to improve. However, we can't address it, you know, if it's in a review. So if you'd be able to email us or shoot us a message on our social medias, we'd be able to personally comment back to you and ask more questions about what we could do and say, hey, we're set out to make sure that we're meeting your expectations if possible. So I guess our message going forward is we want your honesty. We want your feedback. Allow us to be able to tell you what we're doing in order to meet that need, and that we read it and we hear you.
Yes. And another, can I just make one? I echo every single thing you just said. We've had this conversation over and over again, you and I. The one thing that I'd like to add is we understand that we aren't everyone's cup of tea, right? Like, let's just call it what it is. Not everyone's going to love our podcast. Fine. We get that. But if you could, like Amy said, send us the information for improving. Second of all, understand that we can't make a decision on any formalized or finalized outcome on a case because we aren't law enforcement, right? So if we say, you know, we're 90-10 or we're 99-1, it's not because we don't have a stronger opinion, but it's because we don't know. That's why the case is unsolved, right? We don't know. So please don't take that as we are willing to, you know, talk against a family or say someone left their life or whatever it might be with any sort of certainty.
Sure. Yes.
And that's all. But if you love us, we would love a 5-star review. And if you don't,
we do love that.
And if you don't, that's fine. You're welcome to review us, but please email us too.
Absolutely. We're two women who do this in our part time, in our homes, not a professional recording studio. We've learned from nothing on how to record the equipment, the editing, and all of that stuff. So, you know, we're not going to be like NPR or like Serial material with their professionalism.
What?
In recording and knowing the terminology and stuff. I know, it's hard to believe. But I don't want to take too much away from that. I just want to encourage you all to reach out to us and allow us to personally respond to you.
All right. So you have a case today.
I do have a case today. And I was getting into the new Tyler Perry series. And this case was just a no-brainer for me to cover because I was like, this is solvable. Let's talk to a few more people. Let's get the story out there. And I really think it's solvable. And you'll hear why when I start. So I want to preface this with telling you, I'll firm up some dates later, but this takes place in the mid-2000s. And the reason why I'm prefacing that now is because I'm going to take you through this person's life. And I'm not going to have a lot of date markers until the actual disappearance. So just so you have some awareness that, hey, Amy, are you covering some case from the 1970s? No, this is the mid-2000s.
Okay.
Okay. So the case I'm going to tell you about today is the case of Allie Gilmore. Allie was born on January 5th of 1976. Allie grew up in West Palm Beach, Florida, with her mother, her stepfather, and two siblings. Allie was extremely intellectual and focused. She excelled in school so much that she graduated early. Just to back up for a moment, you notice I might not have addressed or said anything about Allie's father. And the reason, or her bio father, excuse me, is because I don't know. I can make an assumption that he wasn't super involved because a lot of the things I've read and listened to, her stepfather's at the forefront. And when he speaks, he talks about past experiences with Allie, and I have to assume he's been around for a little while to have created such a bond with her. I just don't have that information. So anyway, Allie was a runner, and she excelled in that too. She did track, so she was well-rounded, very intelligent, driven, looks like she kind of knew where she was going. So Allie went on to college, and she went to Florida A&M University. She got her degree and stayed local to that area. Allie was able to get a job with the Florida Department of Public Health. Life was really going pretty great for Allie. There's nothing better than working really hard in school, getting off to college, leaving college, and finding a job that seems well within her field. So, you know, as a lot of us want to do, we are proud of ourselves and we want to post our accomplishments on the wall, our achievements. So Allie headed off to get a frame for her diploma. And she took a trip to the local mall to find a frame. While there, though, Allie found something she wasn't probably there for, and it was a connection. Allie met James Gilmore while he was working there at one of those mall kiosks. And they exchanged numbers because I guess they really hit it off. They probably had an awesome conversation. Within time, they were dating. James was divorced with three children to support, but none of that mattered. I mean, the connection was so strong. I think it was just like, we're in this. No barriers, no nothing, no challenges too big for us. Allie was also really great for James. She encouraged him to continue his education while getting married and buying a house. You know, all of these wonderful things are happening for them, and they're both growing as individuals within this companionship, this couple. Things weren't always easy, though. Child support payments were crippling, and Allie picked up a second job at Publix, which it sounds like she had some history there. She might have worked there through college or high school or something, so it wasn't unfamiliar to her. So she was essentially working her 9-to-5 job with the Florida Department of Public Health. And then as soon as she would leave there, she would go to her second job at Publix and work there till approximately like 11 p.m. As you can imagine, this was a huge stressor on Allie and James. And they argued frequently. It was about money and making ends meet, but it was also about like all the work they had to do to make the ends meet really left them with no time for one another. So you can imagine that when you are together and you're fighting about money, you're probably feeling like this relationship is deteriorating. This is too hard. In November of 2005, James moved out. Just as things were rapidly changing, more change was happening. Allie found out she was pregnant. Allie was over the moon, but she was really cautious due to the trauma of a miscarriage within the last year or so. When Allie told James about the baby, it inspired Allie and James to give each other a fair shot. They mutually decided to go to couples therapy, and they wasted no time getting started. Now, So first of all, let me just start off by saying that therapy is still taboo today. More people surely are going, especially to marriage counseling too. Like, all of those numbers are going up and the stigma is slowly kind of dissipating. However, even a few years ago, and even further back than that, you know, back in 2005, therapy was really stigmatized, and it meant something was wrong with you and you need to go in therapy and get fixed. But they both mutually were like, yeah, we need this help. And I think they felt inspired by this possibility, you know, there's this baby and maybe it's telling us that we need to work harder on us. We want to be a family. Maybe we can get past this financial stuff. Maybe we can be a stronger couple. Does that make sense?
It 100% makes sense. And I'm glad they both made that decision.
Me too. It actually makes me feel really happy and hopeful for them as well. At this point, though, it wasn't like, hey, we're going to therapy and everything's fixed. James still didn't, or at least it seems, he didn't move right back in. He was staying with family, I believe. He was staying with a brother. So it was kind of like they were going to do their work and then they were probably going to like slowly transition, if everything went well, back to living together to raise their family.
I think a therapist would probably say that's the healthy way to do it.
I mean, I would say let's address some of the stuff that got you where you are. And, you know, there's no harm in slowly transitioning, but you could definitely jump back in. And if you haven't worked through a lot of that stuff that got you where you are now, then you're at higher risk, at least in my opinion, of making the same patterns or participating in those same patterns, right? So this brings us to Thursday, February 3rd of 2006. Now, at this point, Allie is about 4 months pregnant. So she finds out she's pregnant in about November. And, you know, she's pretty accurate. You know, she's gone to all of her prenatal visits. So she's right at 4 months at this point. So Thursday, February 3rd of 2006 was a typical day. Even though Allie was about 4 months pregnant, like I said, she didn't miss a beat. Allie went to work and she went to the Florida Department of Public Health as usual, and she left at 5. She went to work at Publix right after. So I kind of assume it's in the 6 o'clock hour. Doesn't really matter because we know Allie was there and she worked her full shift. But I assume like she punches out or leaves her office at 5. Changes, goes into work for 6. And she works until about 11 o'clock. Allie's mood was pretty typical. No one said anything was different. And Allie headed home. Allie and James were due for therapy on Friday morning. Unfortunately, James overslept and didn't make the appointment. He tried to contact Allie, but she wouldn't answer the call. James felt that Allie was furious with him and gave it a rest. Which I think if it were me in his shoes, I might be the same way. I'd be like, wow, like we made this commitment to one another and I dropped the ball. Of course she's furious with me because she thinks I don't value it or whatever. But, you know, he's like, it was an accident. Come on, we can move through this one thing, this one barrier. But, you know, she's not responsive. So the only other choice he has is like, if I'm continuously trying to get her to speak to me, let me back off and let me have her cool down a little bit. Simultaneously, Allie also did not show up for couples therapy. This followed her not showing up to work. So I assume she had a really flexible, understanding employer that was like, hey, you have an appointment on Friday mornings for a little while. sure, flex your time, come in late and maybe leave late or do whatever you have to do. We understand. But she didn't show up. And I think people kind of knew what she was going through because from what I understand, their impression was of the mindset that maybe couples therapy didn't go well that day and she was distraught and she just couldn't bring herself to go to work. So people kind of let it rest.
It sounds like it's the perfect storm.
It really is. I mean, this is unlike her, but what are you going to do? Like show up to her house and bang on her door? I mean, that's not really something an employer would probably do. But it's not like her. So they're also kind of like, something's going on, just not enough to be super alarmed. It wasn't until Allie didn't show up for work on Monday that her work was really concerned. And at this point, they basically tried to file a missing persons report or declared her missing. Police and family sprang into action, starting at her home. So it doesn't sound like there was a moment of she's an adult woman, she could walk away or any of those things. They immediately went to start an investigation. So they go to her home and her car was parked in the driveway. And when they went in, everything was left undisturbed. Police felt confident that Allie had made it home from work that night because they saw her work uniform was there. So if, you know, she hadn't made it home, she would have been wearing her work uniform, which therefore would not have been in the room. But it was. So police kind of just noticed that nothing's disturbed. They see that she has a pregnancy book on her bed, maybe that she had been reading. The sheets on the bed were flipped up as if maybe she was under the covers and then got up and flicked them over like we do when we're getting out of bed to go to the bathroom or something or getting up for the day. And other than that, there was no signs of a struggle or anything like that. So, you know, police didn't know what happened. This really gave them no information. And they started to try and piece together her last day. And it started by talking to people. And of course, at the top of the list was James. You know, he's the husband and he's the, for lack of better words, estranged husband right now. So they start there. James was super cooperative and he seemed really honest about the state of their marriage. He says, it's not pretty. We're not in the best spot right now. I moved out. We used to fight a lot. We are in couples therapy and we're trying to work on it. He talked about, you know, the pregnancy and how this pregnancy might not be his.
Wait, what?
I'll get to that in a moment. I know, yes. And I know that that's a shock. And I will get to that in a moment. And police administered a voice stress test, which I'm not super familiar with. As you know, polygraph is kind of like a standard. We've heard of it. We've seen it in movies, TVs, whatever. A voice stress test, I'm not as sure about. But he passed this. He was cooperative. He even had an alibi, although, you know, it was his brother, I believe, because he was staying there. And that checked out, too. The only other place to go was, like, to figure out whose child was this and what that person might have had to do with this. So let me back up to the previous year, 2005. Allie and James are having issues. The last couple of months before he moved out were no doubt really tough. And they might have essentially kind of been in a state of separation, even though they weren't physically separated. So Allie attends a homecoming game at her alma mater, and she meets a man named Dwight Aldridge. They kind of hit it off. It doesn't sound like they got into a relationship, but they were definitely kind of casual companions that hung out. By some accounts, this guy was someone that just dated around a lot. He never really had serious commitments, you know, just living that single bachelor life. He's in his mid-20s. It doesn't sound like he's looking for a wife or anything like that either. So they find out who he is. He does have a criminal record. It's robbery. I know that for sure. I'm not exactly what else is on his criminal record. And they talk to him, and at first he seems pretty cooperative. And then they start kind of asking him where he was the night that Allie disappeared. And he says that he's essentially at home or whatever. What he doesn't realize is that police have the records of where his cell phone pinged.
Oh, no.
And it does not line up with what he's saying. And that is the point that Dwight shuts down and says, I'm done. And he's no longer cooperative. So let me just tell you that those cell phone pings indicate that at some point in the 12 o'clock-ish, 1 o'clock-ish hour, he is in the area of Allie's home. And then he drives about an hour west to the area in which his girlfriend lives. And that is where his cell phone pings next. So he's not really forthcoming. He said he was home. So this doesn't really match what he's saying.
Wait a second. Hold on. He has a girlfriend?
He does have a girlfriend. But at this point, she's working things out with her husband. So this relationship, or whatever it was, probably fizzled out a bit. There is some indication he did know about the pregnancy, and he did go to some appointments with her. But it sounds like she was clear with him, like, I'm working on things with my husband, and what have you. The one piece of information that we didn't have right off the bat is they were able to look at Allie's phone records, and she had spoken with someone in the 1240 to 1247 range the evening going into the next day that she disappeared. And they came to find out that that matched the area that he was in at that time, and she was in fact talking to Dwight. So that is likely the last person that heard from her.
To quote my husband, it's not looking good, very good for Dwight.
Right. So beyond that, with Dwight shutting down, there's not a whole lot that police can do. This case runs, you know, as far as it can run. And now we're just waiting for a piece of crucial information that points us in the direction of who did this to Allie. So that is where that ends. And now we have theories. So we always entertain the possibility of, did they leave their life or die by suicide? And for me, it would be, you know, especially with the information that we have, quite unlikely. She's close with her family. She appreciates her job. She's working on things with her husband. She's very delighted about this pregnancy. And, you know, it would probably take a lot for a woman who is concerned about making sure she has a healthy pregnancy. She reads all about everything in those prenatal books. No doubt it says stuff about trying to take care of your mental health, remain stress-free. She had experienced a miscarriage. For her to up and leave her life, she would have been willing to risk possible stress, leaving her doctor, which she may have trusted.
Yes, but you know what those books probably do not address?
What's that?
A woman is more like the third or second largest cause of death for pregnant women is homicide.
Well, yes, you're absolutely right, which may bring us into our next theory. But just to kind of wrap that first theory or two up, those are the reasons I don't really think that this is a leave your life or die by suicide.
I didn't even know we were talking about them as theories because I don't think they're even remotely close.
Nope, I don't either. But when we still have someone that's missing, I think it's fair to wonder, could they have gone somewhere and start their new life? And I think it's very unlikely. So that leaves us with two theories, James or Dwight. So let's start with James. And what does he have to lose and what does he have to gain? Okay, so James has a wife that he's no doubt in love with, and they're estranged. They had tons of problems. He comes to find out when they want to reconcile that this child might not be his. That is something that you could be really upset, hurt, maybe even angry about. So is it possible that he thought he could work through it with his wife, and after a couple's therapy sessions, he's like, nope, can't do this. I can't even stand the thought she's walking around with, you know, this other person's child, potentially? I don't know. What do you think about that?
So I agree that's probably traumatic to some degree for him. But I would picture him more to leave rather than the extreme of doing something to her. The only reason I could, not reason, I'm going to try to be logical, but it's illogical. The only thing that he might have is he doesn't want new child support.
Right.
if they divorce, he's going to have to pay more child support for another child.
Yes. That might be a reasoning for some.
I don't want to take him off the table, but I don't want to put him on. Like, if law enforcement has basically said he's been forthcoming, I don't think that we can focus on him. But I think it's a valid thought that why would he want to pay more child support when he's already drowning with child support debt?
That's fair. And I might be more stuck on him if there wasn't seemingly another suspicious suspect. So we have Dwight, who casually dates around, not looking for real long-term commitment, or at least seemingly so. And he finds out that someone he's casually dating is pregnant. There's no indication to me that he wanted a child or anything like that. And she says, you know, I'm going to keep it. And maybe that, I don't know if she said it or if this is what he understood, that, you know, if she kept it, that he would have to be responsible for it. So a lot of people might think, like, well, he doesn't want to be responsible for it. So what is he going to do? You know, try to talk her into terminating the pregnancy.
Okay. And then she says no, and then what?
Well, you know, he could have gotten really mad. And he says, I'm going to have to do something about this on my own. I mean, so also, let's take into account this. And I don't know the Florida laws specifically in regards to abortion back in 2005. But there is a particular gestational age that you cannot find a doctor that will do an elective abortion. So, you know, the thought is, well, let me rewind for a moment. So they have to take a genetic test at some point to figure out who the father is. But what I have come to understand, and I think I'm sure on this, I'm not an expert in this area, is that you don't do genetic testing until after the baby is born.
Probably not in the mid-2000s. I think we can now, but in the mid-2000s, I would guess no.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some minimal risk to the fetus if you were to do that. So back then, I think they wouldn't do that until the baby is born. So he runs the risk of letting her carry out this pregnancy, and then he has the risk of finding out that 50-50 shot if it's his child, right?
Right.
He spends the first 4 months of her pregnancy arguing with her to, you know, please get rid of the child. Do you really want this or whatever? And she's like, no, I'm keeping it. And maybe that's why at that point he killed her or, you know, kidnapped her and likely killed her, because that is nearing the point of not being able to gain an elective abortion.
So can you recap the time frame and what his phone did that evening?
So they were on the phone between 12:40 and 12:47.
Likely when she was in bed with her book.
Right, exactly. And his phone matches being in that area around that time. So my thinking is he said, hey, I'm coming to your house or whatever, like, why don't you just get in the car with me? We'll go for a drive. We'll talk about this. And she's like, maybe there's nothing to talk about, but I'm willing to hear what you have to say. So he pulls up to her house and she gets in and something happens. I don't necessarily think in the car, because I think he wouldn't want any evidence in the car, but maybe he goes and parks somewhere and something happens, and then he starts driving towards his girlfriend's house an hour away west. I don't know if he did something with her along the way or if he took care of it, quote unquote, later.
Do we know how long his relationship with his girlfriend would be?
No, and I haven't heard any statements, any identification, any indication that, and I'm not saying police did or didn't. I'm just saying I haven't read anything about police interviewing her or anything like that.
Well, that for me would say a lot also. You know, like if they were in a relationship for 5 years, so to speak, and he was cheating on her with Allie,
mm-hmm.
That's different than if he just started dating her.
Right. But I guess we can't be sure.
Right. But either way, I think that, has it been confirmed by anyone else that he didn't want the baby?
Not to my knowledge. And actually, to arguably his credit, he did go to at least one, if not more, of the appointments with her.
So that makes me wonder if we're talking about this in a different way. What if he wants to actually be with Allie?
Okay.
And he comes to her house and is like, please just stop with your husband, be with me. And she says no.
Oh.
And that escalates.
That's definitely a possibility. And I could spend a lot of time thinking about that. But does that change for you who makes more sense being a suspect?
No, I'd say I'm 5% James and 95% Dwight.
Geez, I think I'm at the exact same place as you. Actually, I might even give less to James. Yeah, I mean, the only reason I give less to James is really because, like, there is no evidence that supports he talked to her. He was in the area. You know, he has an alibi.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that Dwight likely called her and said, I'm going to come over or come pick you up. Probably come pick you up because he had to get her out of the house and did something to her. But, I mean, then what? He drove to his girlfriend's and stayed there?
I mean, if you really are bold, could you have kept, and I hate talking about missing persons as if they aren't really here. It's uncomfortable. However, you know, he could be really bold and have kept the body in the car until the next day that he could take care of it.
I don't think anything happened in the car.
No.
Because police would catch that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because I think he wasn't smart enough to think about police pinging his phone. But I think he would have had some wherewithal to know, like, hey, nothing can happen in my car. Like, I don't need physical evidence in here.
I would need to see his cell phone pings for that night. And not that I have faith in cell phone pings, because as we've learned with Adnan, that they aren't reliable always.
Right.
I mean, I think they're good technology. I'm just curious as to what time he got to his girlfriend's house.
Yep.
And what that time frame looked like. Like, did he have enough time to, I mean, I know it takes, you know, depending on what you do, it's pretty quick to commit a murder. That covering it up is what takes time.
Yes. That's a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I kind of think that's as far as we can go with that. But I can't wrap my head around James being a suspect or being responsible for this, rather. I have to land on Dwight.
I agree with that. But I also think we have to say it's probably not a random person either.
No, she was safe at home. No one broke in. There's no forced entry. She left out of her bed and out into her yard willingly. You know, this isn't, you know, she heard a noise outside and flung the book because she was surprised. She very neatly put her book down, walked out of her room, and left her house.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have to land on Dwight. I just don't know if it's because he didn't want the child altogether or he did want the child and a wife.
Yes. I don't know. That's a tough one.
I think that the motive will be, will differentiate how they charge him if it's him.
Okay.
Because I think that if it was he didn't want the baby and he knew we were coming up on the end of the abortion window, that may be considered premeditated murder.
Oh.
But if he wanted to be with her, it could have been an argument that escalated and it happened. Not that either one is worse than the other, because either way, the result is terrible. But I wonder if that would be my interpretation of that.
And that's what a defense attorney would form a whole story on.
Yes.
Very interesting.
For
well,
sure.
I guess, are you ready to open up?
I am. I am ready.
All right. Well, you know, what do you guys think? Do you think it's someone that we're not even talking about? Are we really just hyper-focused on Dwight? I mean, honestly, let me know, because I'm really, like, in the 95% column for him.
I am, too. I just want to understand motive. So you guys tell me what you think.
All right.
And we'll be back next week with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks. Bye. more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.